What's up?
Not oil.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Oil prices are down sharply today. Traders around the world appear convinced Hurricane Gustav has spared the Gulf Coast infrastructure. So with the wind easing and the dollar at a 10-month high, oil prices fell more than $8 to just under $108 a barrel. The last time prices were in this range was in early April. Steve Henn has more.
Barbara Shook is the Houston Bureau Chief for the Energy Intelligence Group. She says inspections of platforms and pipelines in the Gulf and around New Orleans are just beginning.
The oil companies will be sending out their surveillance planes and helicopters and what have you.
But energy traders aren't waiting for official damage reports to filter back. They're selling off oil futures this morning, and oil prices are dropping.
The assumption is whatever damage may have occurred will be minimal.
Shook says an oil price plunge was only a matter of time.
What's going on is that you finally have prices catching up with supply and demand. The overinflated prices that we had during the summer and the spring were never justified.
Shook believes slowing economies around the globe and reduced use of gasoline here at home has meant there was never really enough demand for oil to support prices near $150 a barrel. And she blames this summer's price spike on speculation. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Shares of airlines, retailers, and big manufacturing companies are all expected to get a boost today from the lower oil prices. And the bulls are off and running on Wall Street this morning. The Dow is up more than 2%, 236 points to 11,780. The Nasdaq is up nearly 2% by 45 points to 2413. The S&P 500 up 1.5% to 1302. European shares are up as well, and it was a mixed day in Asia. Labor Day has come and gone. The traditional summer vacation time is over. The season's high gas prices and airfares were supposed to give hotels a case of the summertime blues, but enter the staycation. Many parts of the country saw aggressive marketing campaigns to, as they say in the travel business, put more local heads in more beds. Jean-Luc Renault reports.
Tourism bureaus across the country spent an average of 30% more on travel promotions this summer than last. Kathy Keefe is with the Travel Industry Association. She says a good portion of that $300 million went to courting locals too pinched to take long trips.
The travel industry was extremely proactive in going after what they call the close-in drive market. They knew that, based on past research, how travelers would react to rising gas prices in a shaky economy.
Many hotels even threw in cheap rooms, spa packages, and dining discounts. Mark Loge is with the Wilshire Grand Hotel in Los Angeles. He says staycation packages brought in about 10% of the hotel's summer bookings.
And really, that 10% really kind of makes up the shortfall that we were going to have this summer.
Staycations might have worked for Wilshire Grand, but they may not be enough to make up for industry-wide losses. Smith Travel Research Group reports summer hotel bookings in June and July were down from 2007, largely due to increased travel costs. I'm Jean-Luc Renault for Marketplace.
Even PBS stations worry about ratings. That's why reruns of the classic children's program Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood are being pulled by stations in cities like Chicago, New York, and L.A. The show's star, Fred Rogers, died 5 years ago. New episodes haven't been taped in 7 years. This is the Morning Report for Tuesday, September 2nd on Marketplace.org. Some analysts think OPEC will cut output if oil prices continue to slide. But Libya says OPEC's output is likely to stay the same. Condoleezza Rice will visit the North African country later this week. Gretchen Wilson has more.
Many average Libyans haven't seen the benefits of rising oil profits and booming foreign investment. The country's leader, Muammar Gaddafi, now says he'll give oil revenues directly to the country's 5 million people by early 2009. That could mean a payout of more than $12,000 per person. That'd pump huge resources into the region, says Cornelis van der Waal, an energy analyst from Frost & Sullivan Africa.
And hopefully a lot of that money will not be spent on everyday goods, but rather be invested back into the economy, creating further job opportunities for the locals, and hopefully have a positive spin-off in the whole North African region.
Gaddafi says Libyans could spend their oil check however they want, like on their kids' education or to start a business. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
Insurance companies can breathe a little easier now that the worst of Gustav has passed. After Hurricane Katrina, insurers reported losses topping $40 billion. Early estimates after Gustav put losses between $6 and $10 billion. And as Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports, private insurers are far less exposed than 3 years ago.
After Hurricane Katrina, many private insurance companies jacked up premiums along the Gulf Coast. Robert Hartwig is with the Insurance Information Institute.
The cost of homeowners insurance in coastal areas that are exposed to hurricanes today is higher than what it was pre-Katrina because the risk has been recognized to be greater.
Allison Plyer is with the Greater New Orleans Community Data Center. She says many homeowners have faced a doubling in their premiums.
Homeowners insurance became incredibly expensive after Katrina, and a number of people did choose not to get it.
That means once the winds die down, it could leave some unlucky homeowners holding the bag. Gustav will also challenge state-run insurance programs. After Katrina, many private insurance companies stopped writing policies along the Gulf Coast. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
It's back to school time. Some parents drive their kids to class, others put them on the school bus. You might think that with gas prices so high, more kids would be taking the bus. But school districts across the country, from California to Alabama and Massachusetts, are cutting back on bus service. Rachel Dornhelm reports on the fallout for many families.
Second grader Adrian Modesty opens his front door in a West Sacramento subdivision and points down the block.
There's like a little park area over there.
And is that where the bus came?
Yes.
Adrian says he's sad he can't ride the bus to school. His mom, Tracy, has stronger words.
You know, it was very, very stressful. Very stressful, and, you know.
A week before school started, Tracy found out the Washington Unified School District was eliminating bus service for her older son. She would have to drive him. There went her new job at her younger kid's preschool.
I had to, you know, quickly type up a letter and say, hey, I'm so sorry, but due to the transportation issue, I can't accept the position.
Now, she won't be able to work. But she says her income is so low that another preschool waived tuition for her two younger children. Carmela Huerta, a West Sacramento mom, doesn't know how to drive. Now it will take her half an hour to walk her two kids from her trailer to school. There is city bus service.
We don't have enough money to pay every day for the bus fare. We'd have to pay for all the kids.
Jim Gannon, transportation director for the Fremont schools in San Francisco's South Bay, blames tight state budgets and soaring gas prices.
Just take that sticker shock and then apply it to a fleet of 42 vehicles serving 29 routes and field trips. And man, we're talking some big bucks.
Big bucks for families, too.
Unfortunately, when a school board decides to cut school transportation services, basically what that's doing is displacing the problem, and it's putting it off on families that are struggling with their own budgets.
Derek Graham is with the American School Bus Association. When you add up gas, babysitting expenses, and lost work opportunities,
ultimately, it's going to cost the families more than it would the school district to start with.
I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
Tomorrow, listen for a look at the rising cost of school lunch programs. The College Board says students last year doled out an average of $800 to $1,200 for textbooks and supplies. A lot of students try to get by with used books. Publishers, in turn, put out new editions. So now some students are doing the same thing with books they do with music, ripping them off from file-sharing websites. Katie McPherson has more from New York.
I found this one a couple weeks ago.
In his dorm room at New York University, 19-year-old Nick is logging onto a website called Textbook Torrent. He's checking to see if any of the books for his fall courses have been copied and posted.
I download most of my music. I download almost all of my movies, and so downloading textbooks just seems like the next logical step.
Nick didn't want to use his full name. Downloading copyrighted material without permission is illegal. But like other college students, he's sick of dropping hundreds of dollars each semester on books.
I feel kind of cheated every time I go to the bookstore.
Not paying a lot for books is the primary motivation behind Textbook Torrent. More than 80,000 users have signed up to download scanned copies of textbooks, often breaking copyright laws. A computer programmer who goes by the name Geekman launched the site last year.
I'm not sure I'd say I'm the Robin Hood, but I know I'm operating in a legal gray area here. And I'm certainly appreciative of the fact that not everybody's going to agree with what we're doing.
Particularly the Association of American Publishers, whose members print over 85% of all college textbooks sold. They've sent takedown notices threatening legal action to Textbook Torrent and dozens of other file-sharing sites. Ed McCoy is director of digital policy. He says he doesn't think expensive textbook prices are encouraging illegal downloads.
I think it's just part of people liking to get things for free. I don't see this as some outcropping of the cost of books.
But economics professor James V. Cook of Old Dominion University says the textbook market is broken. There's little competition, and students often have no choice but to spend top dollar on required books. He wants to see schools develop alternatives, like textbook rental systems. But that's not likely to happen.
Until scholarly associations or boards of trustees actively get into this and say, you know, this market's not working to the benefit of students.
Meanwhile, publishers seem to have gotten the hint. Some have already begun providing discounted digital copies of textbooks. In New York, I'm Katie McPherson for Marketplace.
For the Morning Report podcast or to comment on a story, visit marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Thanks for joining us and enjoy your day. American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.